How's it going, everybody? My name is John Steyer, and you are listening to Social Echoes from True Voice Media. Welcome into the world of social business, learning, and everything in between. This is episode 17 of Social Echoes, but episode 3 of Social Echoes 3M, much more mobile. You can find more episodes on our website, socialechoespodcast.com, and as always, you can go to iTunes or stitcherradio.com and search Social Echoes. If you've enjoyed some of the past interviews or guests, we'd love to hear feedback. Leave a review, a rating, good, bad, or indifferent, just to know how you're liking the show and what else you'd like to hear us discuss. You can always tweet me at Social Echoes, that's social underscore echoes, or at JW Steyert, at JWSTEIERT, using the hashtag Social Echoes, or email me, John, J-O-N, at TrueVoiceMedia.com. Gentlemen, we have a very fun episode today because I have, joining me as always for Social Echoes 3M, much more mobile, the moderator of Mobile Chat and the Ready App product guy from Louisville, Kentucky, home of the national championship winning Louisville Cards, Patrick Goodman.
Yes, and I'll say by interjection, we call it this way. It's L, yeah. That's how we roll in the Ville.
Louisville. And
yeah, Louisville. There's a great joke here. So I always tell people, you know you can pronounce the name of our city correctly after you've had two bourbons.
Louisville.
And you call it Louisville.
Yeah, I saw Jason Falls put up something about that. It was just Louisville.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I'm perfect for that then.
And speaking of being perfect for that, the other guest that we have on the podcast is the president and founder of True Voice Media, Mr. Jeffrey Gibbard. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, John. Thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome. So how are you guys doing today? What's new in the world of mobile, Patrick, as you take a sip of water?
Lots of fun stuff. Past few guests, we've had a mobile chat discussing everything from, QR codes to, I guess we had last week, Greg Hickman, guy who runs Mobile Mixed website, but also podcast discussing about mobile, whether it's responsive design specifically or just in general about the value of podcasting. There's really been a kind of resurgence in the last year or so of social media marketing consultants and analysts re-energizing the voice side, which kind of waned a bit when Twitter and other platforms came out. So mobile really is an extension of that. So the reason podcasts work, if you will, is because people are mobile, and again, mobile is not so much about whether you have an iPhone or an Android. I mean, many people are listening to a podcast on the bus, on a train, in their car. They themselves are mobile, not so much about their specific technology in their hand. And so that's why podcasts are really helpful and informative, especially if people are commuting, as, most of the globe is moving toward an urban context. There's some type of commute that people are involved in. Even if they work at home, they're still commuting somewhere for business meetings. And so to be able to provide, credible thought leadership in those 20, 30 minutes, segments is really helpful. And so, those who are doing podcasts, really applaud the efforts of, getting down to the true kernel of mobile.
Yeah, I mean, the way that I consume the majority of my podcasts are on the train, in the car, in the gym, when I'm running. And that's the way that it's always been for me. And I know that for the majority of people that do listen to podcasts over and over again, that's how they consume. For me, even if I'm writing something and it's going to take a little while, I will put on a podcast as opposed to maybe turning on the radio, because it's not going to be interrupted with commercials and different things. But even if they are, interrupted by a sponsor or something along those lines, it's not going to be the repetitive thing like, buy a car here, because it's going to be for everybody and it's supposed to be evergreen content. Right. Jeff, I know that when I first started talking to you about Social Echoes and the possibility of that, you talked about how, I don't really listen to mobile, I don't really listen to a whole lot of podcasts, but you've gotten hooked now. And it's interesting that Patrick kind of related it to a mobile movement.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I'm a huge music lover. Like, admittedly, I have like 26,000 songs in my iTunes library. I'm constantly jumping from one thing to the next. I listen to all genres except country. I'm really
leave the Kentucky guy alone.
I, whatever floats your boat. I listen to a lot of electronic music, and I know that that's not everybody else's flavor. So, but as a music lover, it was very difficult for me to consider the idea that I could be on the move and actually learn something. Because to me, the transit was always about the beat. It was always about the background music. But when you recommended a couple really fantastic podcasts, and I listened to a few episodes, I realized that it really satisfied my hunger for knowledge. And it gave me it in a way that was really convenient because, what else am I going to do while I'm driving out to a client meeting 45 minutes away? Like, what else am I really going to do that can benefit me in the same kind of way? So I really began to, latch onto a lot of those thought leaders in our industry and let them interview other brilliant people and kind of hear what's going on in it. And it expanded my mind over the course of a quick drive. Mm-hmm. So I really got into that. And Patrick, to your point about mobile, I think mobile is – it's become very similar to social media in the sense that it's got – what I mean is it's very similar to the word social media, the term social media. It's come to mean something to people, and I think mobile means to people Android or iPhone, or it means tablet or smartphone. And in the same way that I don't think social media means Twitter or Facebook, I think it means how do people use technologies that allow them to connect and share. Mobile is about mobility. It's about the ability to move from one place to the next and take data and information with you. So it's more than just, can I listen to my podcast on my iPhone or my Android device? But let's say that I go from my house to my office to somebody else's office. Am I able to actually transport data and information from one device to the next to the next? And I think that's all enabled through the cloud, through the internet. And that's kind of where the future of mobile is thinking about less as tied and triggered to a certain device as it is a lifestyle and a way of bringing things around with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agreed. Uniquely so, we'll take, for example, my morning. So I get up and get the kids on the bus, and so then I've got a little time before my first meeting, and so I go to the gym. Well, I take an iPad with me to get on the elliptical, and I'm reading a book. But I'm reading on an iPad and I'm flipping through screens. I also have my iPhone strapped to my arm listening to music. At the same time, if someone calls me or sends me a message or a ready message, I can hear that and respond while I'm still working out. Or, if I'm running, I'll use an app to track progress, which has kind of been really fun for me. So that's the part that's unique about mobile. And, when the whole cloud conversation really began to be, legitimate about 5-6 years ago, and that's what, Steve Jobs and others were saying, was it's not about sticking on a device. It was letting you access that no matter where you're at. Mm-hmm. So if I'm reading a book and I get to a certain place, and great, so now I've got, 4 or 5 minutes to read, I can go right back to that. A really unique thing, I saw this past weekend on a website called Steam Feed, and a lady named Jessica Ann, it's Jessica Ann, I think with just one A, on Twitter said that mobile is the new cigarette. Think about this. Social. Okay. So you work and you go outside to take a smoke. Most people do. But in a healthier lifestyle, removing cigarettes are dying. So, I mean, it's funny, right? So I often have my iPhone in my pocket. And when I've got a little time, I pull it out and I go look at Feedly or I go look at Twitter, right? It's my new cigarette. And I'm like, holy smokes, literally. She is dead right. That's
old
it, right?
Greaser style, right? Wrap it up in the shirt sleeve. That is. Can you imagine that? That would so not be badass if you saw like the greaser, like the little, right? Comb in the hair, and they pull out their like iPhone from their white T-shirt. Mm-hmm. It's not the same.
So I was like, that is really helpful to think about why mobile is so powerful. It is the new social part. I mean, people go out and smoke together. They stand together and talk. That's all we're doing. Those of us who don't smoke but still want to connect, I'm chatting with folks, and they're.
And I would say it's equally or possibly more so addictive. I mean, think about how many times somebody who smokes pulls a pack of cigarettes out of their pocket. Think about how often you pull your mobile phone out of your pocket. Did you get a notification? That's a reason to pull it out. Did you just think of something you want to search for? You pull it out for that. Sometimes we just I just mindlessly pull it out. Like, did something happen I need to see? Mm-hmm. So same sort of thing. I think, it's also got the addictive properties as well.
Yeah, agreed. Sadly, but it is what it is.
And it's interesting that you guys both bring up the cigarette kind of metaphor to it, only because 2 weeks ago, Mad Men returned, which means I'm a very happy camper right now.
As am I.
Yeah. And if neither of you have seen last night's episode, I will keep mum.
Please, I watched it. I did not watch it, so, choose carefully the words you use, John.
You didn't say who died?
Oh my God, seriously?
No, I'm messing with you.
There's about to be like a real like Google Hangout brawl. If that's such a thing.
Ida Blankenship died. No, this the idea of the cigarette thing, because everybody on that show smokes, right? It basically it's like, what if you just gave everybody, instead of a pack of Lucky Strikes, just gave them an iPhone, a Nexus 4. And it's just, like, it's just the idea of moving away from now, like from the cigarette thing. I read a blog post from Mitch Joel, and Mitch is so fascinating with all the different away from PC movement, not necessarily just the mobile movement, but just everything is going away from having to sit at your desk like the three of us are right now. We're using either laptops or a desktop to access a camera on our computer, microphones, and then broadcasting this over the internet, which other people can look at on their mobile devices. But we're not using our mobile devices to broadcast this. But the reason that we do this is because of the accessibility, the ease of use that our PCs and our Macs kind of offer us. So it's almost interesting, like if we were to replace the word mobile with access, because I think, Patrick, what you were talking about before we jumped on, you said it's feet and wheels versus the tech in your hand. And basically what I'm going to guess, and I want to let you explain it certainly, because it sounds like a fascinating idea. But, you know, the feet and the wheels, that's you moving. That's you always on the go. And, I mean, the three of us, we're very active people. I mean, the two of us are in one, you know, geo-specific location, and you're in another, Patrick. But it's just so fascinating that our lives kind of are so always on the move, but we connect with this one centralized thing. But it's not the centralized thing that we primarily use isn't the one that I'm looking at you with in front of me that I'm able to see your faces. It's this one. Mm-hmm. And that goes with me anywhere I go. So that's
the true power of mobile. So to kind of back up, I mean, I've said, you know, before kind of in joke, but somewhat serious, you know, Facebook was not this brand new phenomenon. I mean, think about it. The first Facebook really was the post office. All these carriers would go out and find out what's the news in the little rural area or whatever or country, and they'd come back into the hub of the post office and talk about it. That's all Facebook is. Or I've laughed that, you know, really the first Instagrammers were cavemen. They wanted to paint pictures and share them, right?
They only had six filters back then, though.
Well, I know, right? They had like Antique Part 2, Blood Spatter, and
Lomo. They had the border.
Yeah. But
how many likes did they get on their cave paintings?
It's how many, I guess, you know, spears they would like. They'd go and vote, put your spear next to the one you like the most. But that's really helpful when people build tech and when we ourselves are a startup as a company. But I look at those who do behavior really well, they find that and they match it. I mean, there's a reason that some of the platforms we use all the time, they're just matching behavior. So I used and took notes a decade before, you know, Evernote ever came out. But there's a reason I use Evernote for everything. It's my digital brain. Take notes, meetings. I have a Moleskine even. I can take notes in a client meeting, or I have thoughts about this and what about that. And then I can take a picture and sync it. So there's that access piece, that it's always able and, you know, connected with me. But if you think about it, when it comes to the desktop where we're sitting in this moment, you know, really as human beings for, you know, eons or however old, you know, the earth is, people have been mobile. They've run to go hunt. They chase down stuff, right? They've always been mobile. It's only, and even in factories, people were upstanding and working when the Industrial Revolution came on. It's only really been the last 50, 60 years where people have kind of moved into cubicledom and told to go sit in this, you know, stale box. And it's like the really bad version of office space. Have you seen my stapler kind of thing? And the guy walks around, you know, but people are social people. I mean, I don't know. I lived in that environment for, you know, several years. I hated it. I mean, I didn't want to talk to these stale walls. I wanted to interact and communicate and collaborate with people. I'm a social person. And distributing that's what was so bad about it. And so thankfully that mobile allows me to get back on my feet and go and collaborate differently and not have to sit behind a cubicle to do that. That's why I think mobile is, you know, I've said before, I'll say it again, is that mobile is more than just disruptive, and people love that term a lot. That's why it's revolutionary.
Yeah.
You know, it's the Gutenberg printing press that scales everywhere across mm-hmm. the globe to everyone. That's what makes it so powerful.
Yeah, and you know what I would add to that is that I think that, you know, there's a lot of talk of the post-PC era, and I think there's a lot of talk of the rise of mobile, and I don't think there's enough context when people talk about that. So, for instance, the rise of mobile, people take that to mean the death of PCs or the death of sitting in an office, and I don't think that's true. I think what it is, it's just untethering us. It's making us have more options and more flexibility in how we work, where we move, can we be, you know, untethered from our desk and do work elsewhere. You know, I can take, I can go from my 27-inch iMac in here. I can take this very same conversation to a certain extent to my my 11-inch MacBook Air and go over to Starbucks. Mm-hmm. I can also then swap it onto my Nexus 7 tablet, or I can go onto my iPhone and have the same conversation. So I don't think that any one device, and while yes, from hours of usage, I would probably say that my phone gets a little bit more usage than maybe my computer, but maybe even not. Desktop search is completely on the rise. It's just not as steep as mobile. So I think we look at a lot of the trends and we say, yeah, you know, this is going to replace that. I just think it augments what we have. And like I said, it untethers us from a certain stagnant experience of having to sit behind a desk. But I don't think by any means that the kind of the post-PC era conversation means the death of the PC era. I just simply mean, I think it means an expansion of our options, that we now have more form factors, more devices, and we use them for what they're appropriate. You know, the Photoshop on my phone is not nearly what Photoshop on my computer is. I don't think it ever will be. I don't think you'll ever have Final Cut happening on a tablet in the same way. It's just not the right form factor. You need more real estate. You need more oomph. And John wants something on that. Hit me with it, buddy.
Well, because of the one video that you sent over from Ryan Merkley, and he did his one TED Talk. Ryan Merkley works for the Mozilla Foundation. Mozilla, and so anybody who doesn't know what Mozilla is, Mozilla created Firefox. And Ryan Merkley presented this really awesome piece of open source software called Popcorn. And it was funny, Jeff, I wanted to bring this up. And Patrick, I don't know if you've seen this video yet, but
I haven't.
It's really...
Oh, it's awesome. We're going to send it to you. It's awesome.
And basically, in the same way that you can go into GarageBand or, you know, whatever the stock version of Final Cut is on, like when you open up your Mac, you can drag and drop different bits of, you know, video, whether it's photos, your own video that you've like shot, like of yourself just talking, you can mm-hmm. overlay maps in there, different bits of information, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it looks so professional. It looks like you may have done it in Final Cut Pro.
Oh, like iMovie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got the same layout, but it allows for elements other than sound and video.
And it's totally free. I mean, it's totally open source. And just to watch something like that really gets me excited, because I don't know how to truly operate Final Cut Pro. Not like my buddies who are doing it in you know, video production studios.
Right.
And to see something like that really gets me excited for just, I mean, that kind of is like socializing the web. It's mobilizing the web. And you know, I think of my 4-year-old goddaughter. What is she going to do with a computer? Like she's all like when she looks at a regular camera. And it doesn't have the flip. You can't like move the camera photos on there like just on the screen. She's done with it. She's totally just out of like she's like, okay, I can't deal with this.
And... A button? I can't be bothered with a button. What am I, grandpa? A button.
And it's true. I mean, it's funny, but like Patrick, and you have young children, like mm-hmm. you probably see it the same way.
Yeah, my 20-month-old son can easily open the iPad. He can swipe. He just—I mean, honestly—he knows how to swipe to open. I think he just watched me. I never showed him how to do it. He can go find his screen, and we have different education and games. And one, he can click on that, and it will expand out. He can pick his game, launch it, and he's running with it. And there's games we play where he has like a word, and he's 20 months old, and he can see the word like, you know, water. and the WATER around the screen, he'll click on one and go, wah, 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 and he can drag it over and drop it on the W. And then he gets in and go, yay! I didn't teach him anything. That's why it's so fun to watch him and me not have to teach him anything.
That's really cool.
That is very cool. And so, we watch videos and play games, but all my kids can do that. It's the hard part for, the three of us are different where we live and breathe this every day. So we have had to break technology and fix it and figure it out, right?
It's the best part.
It is. My kids and generations that are coming when it comes to technology, their human OS is already way caught up. That's why it's so hard to explain technology typically to, a generation that walked around with a day timer. Their OS was that. Mm-hmm. Well, now it's shifted to technology. And I'll even say this, I don't know how soon it will be, but in many regards, even when I'm working on a book at the moment, I can think and speak faster than I can type. I wished voice recognition was better so I could actually get rid of the keyboard. I really don't see it won't be next year, maybe even the 10 years, but there'll be a time where we can just remove the keyboard completely.
Well, you can to a certain extent. It just takes humans. So you should just dictate the whole thing, use Odesk and outsource it to the Philippines or Malaysia. It'll cost you $5 an hour. They'll do the whole thing for you. It's a great use of your time. 4-hour work week, man. Outsource it all.
Yeah, the book, I'm not so sure about that.
Fair enough, man. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, I mean, I just want to add one thing, though, to John's point about popcorn. What I think is most exciting about it is actually the context. So it's not just that you can create something that's professional looking, it's that for the first time in the way that he described this and why I was so excited about it, is not just that you drop maps on there or that you can drop links, it's that you can interact with those things as well. So that it's not actually just a video as we've thought of video, which is there's a start time and an end time, and then in between is just the content. Now it becomes this dynamic experience in which at each moment, at each frame that you add a new piece of information, people mm-hmm. can interact with it and take it in a new direction. Now, just a little bit of context. I went to film school for undergraduate. So for me, I'm always looking at what's in the frame. I'm always thinking about, video as a time-based media. And this just breaks that. It just completely removes it. And if we think about it, it's not all that different from what hyperlinks have done to the idea of text. Think about a book that's on paper versus a blog post with links to additional context and information.
Or a book that's in an iPad. I mean,
yeah.
I not to interrupt you, but that's kind of exactly what I think about, like when you're trying to explain the video and how just the different interactive pieces that are in there. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so, but what I'm thinking about is if we look at what happened to the web when we, not to the web, but what happened to the world when we started adding context to different information. We have text and we can link it to other text, and we have text and we can link it to other text. Think about video right now. How much video there actually is out there. What if all of that was contextually inside of the video linked to other video? What the hell is that going to look like? And what fascinates me is that I just saw a post today on LinkedIn. I didn't read it, but I saw the headline, and it was almost too obscene for me to look at and actually read. It said, four things that will happen in mobile over the next 40 years. I'm sorry, let me repeat that. Four things that will happen in mobile over the next 40 years. Are we kidding? Are we really actually able to think that we can project 40 freaking years out into the future? Do we look at the last 5 and have any idea that this was about to happen? How is somebody going to write that post even?
How about the next 40 hours?
Right? I mean, seriously, like what could when I saw that popcorn video, I was like, that just changed everything. Like when this happens, this will change everything. So how in the world are we going to look at like mobile over the next 40 years? Like seriously, dude, slow down. Take the next 40 months and see if you can hit it. Just making predictions for the year is difficult enough. I don't know how people consider that they can do that. It's remarkable.
You got to go high level. Just, well, we'll be more connected generation. Duh. We'll be more mobile working. Duh. I mean,
more computers, more robotics, more automation.
Yeah. Those don't do much for me when it comes to that. I mean, predictive stuff. Or
there will be an iPhone 6.
Dun dun dun.
Will it be a watch? Will it be flexible? Screens. Who knows?
I feel like it's going to be something that we don't even see coming, because that's typically what it is. It's not the things that we can predict, because if we could predict them, they wouldn't be groundbreaking. I think there's going to be stuff that we don't even see coming. Like Google Glass, I don't think people really saw coming. You know, I think new phones, new displays, things like that, but like wearable tech, heads-up displays, contextual information based upon location and habits and things like that. Now that is something, yes, it's kind of an evolution. We kind of could have seen it, but the fact that it's here, it's almost here, that is pretty remarkable to me. I mean, I've said this before, but like, is anybody else just fascinated by where we live in the freaking future? I did a video chat with my dad, who's in Mexico, while walking down the street in Philadelphia. Like, that's the future. That's some Jetsons type stuff.
No, I love it. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Glass. I mean, look at my social avatar.
I love it, man.
Yeah,
so we see the world through the iPhone or through our phones.
That's it. So what's Google Glass?
It's basically removing the need for your hands.
There you go. Yeah. So, I'm a big fan. Fortunately, I didn't win the lottery to be one of the early, you know, users of it. I did tweet out whenever they had their, you know, if I had glass, I told them, I said, hashtag, if I had glass, I'll change my social avatar for you. They did. Fairly.
They were like, woo.
Yeah, somehow that wasn't enough for them.
No, I think it was.
I would film myself cooking dinner.
They looked for some folks that had larger, you know, platforms and more, you know, friends, fans, and followers on social channels. I get it; it's fine. You know, my big hope is whatever, you know, Apple comes out with next or Android comes out next. From a guy who lives and breathes, you know, developing mobile products, the biggest thing that always hurts us is when they start changing screen sizes, or they make significant changes in operating systems. I mean, we're already developing for two different screen sizes for iOS. Well, three if you count iPad, which, you know, thankfully.
Four if you count iPhone 4, iPhone 5, iPad mini, and then iPad.
Well, the thing about the mini is, though, when we build an iPad-specific app, it scales up or down based on the size.
Oh, okay.
But for an iPhone 4, 4S, or an iPhone 5, it's actually we have to modify our existing app based on the size of it. Android is another deal completely. I mean, I get why people love Android, but those who develop for it, it's a pain in the keister. Because we have to go four all the way down from, you know, we're doing gingerbread and honeycomb and ice cream sandwich and jelly bean. And apps function completely different. The UI, UX is high level is the same, but when you get into it, they're different. And so, you know, all I'm pleading is if iOS 7 comes with iOS 6 and it comes out late summer or fall, you know, please, oh, please don't change the screen size, you know, dramatically.
Yeah. And I'm with you, man. More so fragmentation is a problem.
Because
I think it holds us all back. It's the same thing with, like, open web standards. Like, the more we have something standardized that everybody can build upon, as long as we're then willing to at least not accept that and can you continually try and push for the next standard. But I think standards are important. And as far as, you know, the screen size, you know, debate, I think that's one of the things that's been really effective for Apple is the consistency, is that they limited the choices, that here's our screen size, black or white, and introducing the new size. While I love my iPhone 5, if they were to get into this war with Samsung over the phablets and the giant phones and then the 5 and then the 4 and they have all these different sizes, then they just become fragmented like Android. And don't get me wrong, I've recently fallen in love with a lot of different stuff on Android. I have a Nexus 7 tablet. I think that, you know, the most recent iterations of Android has been fantastic. A friend of mine has a Nexus 4. It's freaking beautiful. But the fragmentation in the market is just, it's sad. When I see people who have like an LG that's running like, I don't know, Android back in the C's, D's, and E's, wherever those were. And then I see somebody who has like the Motorola Droids, or I see somebody who has the HTC and the Samsung, and then the pure Android devices with Nexus. They're all different. There's just crapware on all of them. And I get that, you know, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine the other night. I get that the purpose of Android initially was that you can make it whatever you want. But I think there's a middle ground between Apple's draconian controls of you can't do this on our system and Android's like, it's a free-for-all, no big deal. We got all these different screen sizes and OSs and whatever, and put whatever you want in the App Store. Like, there's a middle ground where there's choice, there's freedom, there's flexibility, but there's also consistency and standards. And that's what I want to see. Yeah. That's the market opportunity. Middle ground.
Yeah, I have an Android. And Jeff, you know how bad my phone is. My phone is an old phone. It's running a software that's not supposed to be running, and excuse you, whoever that just was. And
my phone buzzing. Sorry,
it's okay.
I'm in a fight with Facebook. We're emailing back and forth. I'll tell you all about it later.
Shocking. But I love the idea of what Nexus 4 is. I would prefer that Nexus 5 comes out before the Samsung 4, but yeah. Obviously that's not going to be the case. But real quickly, to kind of shift gears and change the conversation a little bit, I want to talk about, Patrick, some of the guests that you had on mobile chat. Mm-hmm. First one being Kim Reynolds. And Kim, she's at QR Kim or Kim uh-huh. QR.
Yeah, at QR Kim.
And she talked about the differences between QR codes, and that was primarily what was being discussed. And I personally think that QR codes are really awesome technology. At the same time, I think that NFC will eventually trump what QR codes do. I asked her a question during mobile chat, like, where do you think that NFC will kind of jump over QR codes, and where was that, maybe that evolution, where does that occur? And her response kind of surprised me, because she said they're two totally different technologies. Patrick, I mean, I'm sure you saw that question. You may have even had it in the Storify mm-hmm. Mobile chat. But when you saw it, did you agree with Kim? Do you see these as two separate technologies, or do you think that maybe it's not that they're two different technologies, they're two different sets of behaviors?
So the medium's the same, which is mobile. The behavior is a bit different. And also some of the pain they're trying to solve. So think of it this way. A QR code can do lots of stuff, and they, rightly so, have been pretty, lambasted in most of the people in the marketing space. People threw them everywhere and did not design a very effective user experience after, connecting to their mobile, link. I mean, that's all a QR code does, is just a real-world offline link to connect you to something online. The problem is that marketers got really excited. Oh, cool. I can put a QR code to my, homepage.com. The problem was their site wasn't mobile ready, mobile optimized, or even what was it called sometimes, fluid design, to be able to handle that. Or it went to their homepage. Well, mobile's different. Just like, Jeff, you were discussing Final Cut Pro on a desktop is definitely different on mobile. Most people didn't do that well. And so I've seen people in the last little bit saying, you should not just completely skip QR codes and wait for NFCs, which may be true, but where the real money's going to be, no pun intended, with the NFC is going to be in mobile payments. The issue, though, is when you go there, there's not right now massive pain that I need to pay with my mobile devices compared to a credit card. I mean, Square is kind of the medium to get you to NFC in the future, or PayPal or whatever.
Level Up. Shout out to Level Up. Love me some Level Up.
Yeah, I had Level Up as a guest. I think it was last December. We did a big month on shopping and payments, and I get it. I love what they're doing. But when you do it, you've got to figure out what pain are they trying to solve. If there's not massive pain, there's got to be a greater benefit to get me to use that. And while I'd be a fan and I'm happy to try it, it's just there's no place in Louisville, Kentucky right now where I could try that, because it's difficult. And I get this. A previous startup before the one I'm in now, we were doing loyalty stuff via mobile app, but the biggest thing you got to do there is the point of sale system. And the conversation, not as much now, but was solo mo, social local mobile. But to do that well and to monetize, and this is even where I'm not going to slam Foursquare, but they're trying to figure out how to make money, but they still keep taking money in. The treasure chest of the whole solo mo conversation is the point of sale system. You have got to integrate there if you're going to take a slice of what that payment is. I mean, that's how other people in the market. What's the company in New York that does? They run Five Guys mobile app and others. I can't think of who they are, but they built an app so that they'll build your app if you're a large restaurant, and they'll take a slice of online ordering. And they built all that tech, which is great. So the pain there is you're at your house and you want to order something, and it comes to you.
Seamless?
Or you're sitting, you're off. No, I can't remember what the name is. I could find it later on and show you if you want it. But
Grubhub?
Not Grubhub. But they're same
that
kind of
style of thing.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. But that's where you've got to integrate with the point of sale system, and that's what Foursquare did a great job of saying. Hey, I'm here, and okay, great. So the restaurant says, "Cool, you're here. let me give you a beer, and then there's never no kind of connection. And so for the restaurant or whoever, just to give value back to the restaurant, as Foursquare does, they've got to connect more to that person. Well, the restaurant can't connect to you. They can't send you emails or tweets or whatever else. It's scale. Yeah, one-to-one. Hey, thanks for coming in. That's true. But you all know this well. So you're in the space of social business and rethinking of how businesses use social media effectively. Shifting that paradigm has been hard for them. And the same has been true for other people doing the specific location play. It takes a lot of shift there. So that'll be effective. NFC will work first. iPhone 6 coming out this summer. Let's say they throw NFC chip in it. The whole world is not going to go mobile payments. The problem is the point of sale system. It's just like when people used to pay with cash. And then credit cards came out. I mean, it took, you know, probably a decade or more to get people to have, you know, the credit card readers in their stores. And then MasterCard and Visa and everybody else takes a slice of that. Well, the same will be true when you get mobile payments. Now people are throwing Square, you know, dongles into their mobile devices and paying. That's uber cool. If you're, you know, one small restaurant or two, or if you're selling things at like a local flea market and such, and you want to take, you know, credit card payments, love those. But to get to the enterprise level and have multiple places to do mobile payments, NFC is just not going to win for a while.
Well, sorry. How about this with NFC? You have like, okay, so there's just something, there's an item, and I'm shopping in a store. I'm in a physical retail location. I have my mobile device. It's NFC enabled. There's different mm-hmm. things throughout the store that might have an NFC chip, maybe on a sale flyer or whatever, some kind of placard. Mm-hmm. And I then tap my mobile device right there. And yeah. It then brings me to another page. I'm able to then maybe sign up for something or find a coupon, bring me to a page, maybe I get a better deal, et cetera, et cetera. It brings me down some kind of other sales funnel. Which I think QR codes, they tried to do that before mm-hmm. With QR codes, and maybe because it just it's messier than maybe what NFC can be, and you have to explain to somebody, well, in order to get the QR code, you have to have this app. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have NFC enabled, then once you just explain to somebody, you mean we could be on a couch and somebody like, you know, at Thanksgiving could be like, well, what's this NFC that's in my phone, and like, you know, their 17-year-old nephew then explains to them, well, here's what you can do with this NFC-enabled phone. And then they say, oh, yeah, I saw that in Macy's or whatever, you know, whatever store. They then go, they tap it. Everything's on the phone. It becomes a different experience. And that's what I always thought of with QR codes. And it just becomes – it's just a larger way. It's a bigger roadblock with QR codes. The idea is there, but maybe just the execution is just too cumbersome right now.
Yeah, my
Jeff. I was going to say that just to kind of add to Patrick's point, I think that really, you know, QR codes, NFC, in many ways they represent the same things when we're discussing mobile. It represents a link from the offline world to the online world in some way, or to some resource of some sort. And really, the transition from QR code to NFC is just going to be about removing friction. John, to your point, you don't have to say, oh, you have to download this app and then you have to do this. It's just built into the phone. It's just waving your phone and making sure that that option is on. So it removes some of the friction. And Patrick, I want to, you know, just comment on something that you said about the readiness or the acceleration at which, you know, mobile payments like this will be adopted. I actually think that there's a very good chance that mobile payments using NFC could take off extremely quickly, because I think it's, one, very easy to implement. There's already enough of those PayPass type things that, you know, simply integrating with existing carriers like MasterCard and Visa, that alone, but at the pace at which technology is being created and developed, if you just look at what Square did, for instance, and they developed a little thing, pop it right into a phone, and now you can take credit cards. I think the same thing, if we look at the future and think the first stepping stone after NFC payments is using existing carriers like the existing credit card companies. Once we decentralize that, think about what LevelUp is doing. You decentralize that and you take it away from those carriers and you say, we're now a payment acceptor and provider. And you build in game mechanisms like incentives and mm-hmm. things that build loyalty. I think we're looking at something that could take off very quickly. And the reason being is that if you think about cash versus credit cards. The reason that behavior took a while is because it was foreign. Well, now that concept is not foreign. And if we look at people who spend money using cash in versus people that spend money using credit cards, in general, those that spend credit cards spend more freely. They acquire more debt because there is no pain associated with the swiping of a card versus mm-hmm. the actual exchange of paper money that has perceived value to it. So mm-hmm. in the same way, I think in the same way that QR codes to NFC are removing friction, moving from taking out my wallet and pulling out my card to the phone that's already in my hand because I was texting someone and just waving it, we're now looking at removing even more friction. We're looking at people that are thinking even less about the purchase decisions that they make. I know that when I go into Starbucks, which I'm a huge Starbucks junkie, that's my brand. I love them. But one of the things I love is that they developed this mobile payment system where I can pay with my phone. And I remember once I had a meeting over at a local coffee shop, and I went in and I said, I'll have a macchiato. And they said, okay, cool, that'll be such and such, $2 and whatever. And I said, you guys take credit card, right? And they said, no, cash only. I said, cancel that. I sat down, had my meeting. 15 minutes later, I walked across the street to Starbucks and paid with my phone.
Right.
And I think that that's just, I believe that especially the up-and-coming generation of workforce and of customers want that. They want to not even carry a wallet. They want one device that has everything, that's secure, that can be wiped clean remotely, and that has everything that they need on it. So I think it would actually take off exceptionally fast. Just my thoughts.
No, from the behavior side, I totally agree. So the reason that Starbucks, it rocks it so well is they have integrated deeply in the point of sale system.
Absolutely.
So I believe they use micros. So when I go in and pay with my Starbucks app, I've got X number of dollars on there. I pay. It automatically deducts it. I get a push notification saying, hey, your account is now this. It's also in Passbook. When they're that big, that's really helpful. The difficulty is going to be is that, you know, they're not in every corner. You've got little mom and pop shops and grocery stores and such like that. They could get there. I mean, they've already installed, you know, the swipe your credit card thing. Trust me, I'm all for it. And I've told people,
oh, I know you're all for it.
I tell them, you know, Starbucks people, like, I'll go and pay with the phone. And sometimes they'll ask, do you want your receipt? I said, why would I want a receipt?
Yeah, I'm paying with my phone. Why do I want paper, buddy? Yeah, I'll tell you what, they could still do one thing better on that, just in case anybody from Starbucks ever does happen to listen to this podcast. Here's what I think, the one thing that they could do, I don't like that I have to reload sometimes, and I know that there's an auto reload feature. Mm-hmm. I just want it to draw directly from my credit card. I don't want to have to load a certain amount onto my card. I just want my Starbucks card to be the credit card. So that there's no – because I've had times where I've gone up to the counter and I'm like – I'm down to like $4 or $6 and whatever it is like $2 more than that. And I have to go, oh, hold on, and I have to put in my password and do – I don't want to do that. I just want to link.
And I could be wrong. I haven't done it in a while, but I believe if you'll log into the desktop experience of Starbucks with your username and password, you can set up when it gets to, say, your balance gets to $25, it would automatically – you could put in the amount you want it to go back to.
I thought I set that up. Maybe it's my bad. So if anybody from Starbucks is working, I'm going to look into this first.
Well, you let me know. And if you want, I'm social media friends with one of their social media managers. She's at Paige I Am. Fun, lovely social gal.
They do social right. They're really good at that. And you know, if you ever want to tell her what a big fan I am and how they should send me like tons of free Starbucks via just because of my loyalty and my promotion of them, I would not stop you from doing it.
Well, tell her she's at Paige I Am on Twitter. Tell her, you know, you love her and you want to get connected and get some free goodies. Here's why I think I just had this conversation about 2 hours ago with a potential user of the software company, mobile company I'm working with now. And it's the same play whether it's external, you know, social mobile communications or whether it's internal. Here's why Starbucks is doing so well is, you know, and I'll blatantly borrow, creatively steal from Gary Vaynerchuk. They put a ring on it. We're going to go here. We're going to allocate human resources to manage the Twitter accounts. We're going to allocate people to manage Facebook and Pinterest and all these places. We get people to social. And so instead of spending $1 gazillion on massive TV advertising, so they're still doing some of that to a degree, but they're reallocating and putting people to connect human to human behind the avatar. That's why they're winning. They're not automating social. Anytime you automate, you have lost the whole point of engagement. That's why they care. So when I've tweeted them before and I've got a response back.
That's awesome. That's you put a ring on it.
It is. You can't date it. You can't, you know, and you know, free advice, since you guys, you get what you pay for. You guys are out wanting to find clients for social media. If somebody said, hey, we want to try this for 30, 60 days and see what, you know, let's do a couple blog posts and we'll tweet those out and get any engagement. You're going to fail. You are. Yeah. Just tell them. 60 days, you're going to suck.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go 6 months. Go a year. You know, ask the person, well, when you went and started dating your future spouse, how long did you guys engage and date before you put a ring on it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Then you put a ring on it. Did you stop? You mm-hmm. know, did you set up, hey, I'm gonna auto text my spouse at 3 o'clock every day.
And did you half-ass date her? Did you say, yeah. Oh, we'll go out once a month. It'll be great.
Yeah.
We'll have such a long, rich relationship. I love you so much that I'm going to put in one blog post per month.
Did yeah. you John Draper her? Yeah. Basically.
So good.
That's you're basically terrible. That's terrible, but that's seriously, that I think that's a lot of, that's how a lot of companies still see social, because it's just, it's an add-on. It's something that they think about because everyone else
check. We have a Twitter account now. Check. We're good. We've
how
done
do we,
it.
How do we get that little blue check? Does everyone, can we buy those?
Stop it.
I want a verified account so bad. That's almost like poking at me a little bit, because I really do want one.
Oh, really?
Look, I mean, I'm not much for most social status type stuff or social proof. I mean, I believe social proof is very important, and I am definitely not all about it in most places, but I am like such a Twitter fanboy, like it's unbelievable. So that's like the one place that like having it would be meaningful to me. Like you could give me every badge on Foursquare. You could like, you know, list me as a featured user on Facebook or whatever. I would not care. But if I got that little verified on Twitter, I would feel like I've made it. I know it's ridiculous. There's absolutely no, I mean, I am me. I verify I am Jeff Gabbard, but like, I know there's nothing behind it that means anything, but it would just mean something. And it's like my own little fangirl type thing going on.
Well, you can do your brand, you know, True Voice Media. You can get that verified.
Could I? We should do that. Yeah. John, we'll put that on the to-do list.
Well, I mean, it's not like you can just go say, hey, we want this, but you could, you know, I have a specific brand and it's mm-hmm. a known entity. That way, if anybody is, you know, trying to stump on that, you can go take that account from them.
I'm writing that down.
Yeah. The same on for Google Plus, you can verify, you know, pages and such.
Yeah. Well, it's getting a little late in the hour. It's time to wrap up a bit. But Patrick, before we let you go, I wanted to say congratulations to you and the Ready App team for raising your Series A.
Thanks.
There you go. Congratulations to that.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. You know, exciting, fun things.
Hangout toolbox, baby.
That's fantastic.
You could do like, you know, the touchdown dance. I'm a football guy, so, you know, I got to, you know, go this way.
Right. Yeah.
But here's what's fun, right? So, and here's what people sometimes ask me what I do, and I tell people this. I get to build a product I really care about and think is uber important, really, really important. And then I get to go tell people about it, you know, and get them to use that. You know, so I think it was last week I wrote a blog post, you know, about, you know, for me, the most important button in any social platform or network is the reply button. It's letting people connect. And if businesses will believe that, you know, and here's why the people haven't put a ring on it. So why don't people sometimes, you know, take the step and get married and put a ring on it? Because it's hard. It takes work. It takes effort, right, to have a meaningful relationship or a meaningful marriage or a meaningful relation between parent and child. It takes work. There's no different in social, whether you do it externally to consumers and customers or internally for your employees and partners and associates. It just takes effort and time. And that's how I coach people. If you are going to set up an account and just, you know, automate and, you know, communicate to consumers and employees and not communicate with a reply button, then stop, you know, delete the account and move on to something else.
Yeah. I love the way you said that too, because I was having a conversation with a friend of mine the other night. He's been in the same job for 5 years now, and True Voice Media now going into our third year. I think this is the longest I've been in any job myself. And we started talking about what I do and you know, what he does and this and that. I started telling him about like the business development, the meeting with clients. And he said, you know, I don't think I could ever be in sales. And I was like, you know what? I bet you could. Think of it this way. You know what I do? You know what my sales process is? I get to go and tell people about a company that I built, that I have passionate people working for, where we do amazing things, where we help businesses survive the next decade by embracing social. And I love what I do. And I just get to tell people about that. And then a lot of them sit down and say, you know what, I'd like to work with him. That is my sales process. And it's just like you said, it's I'm passionate about something and I just talk about it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies want to do work with me because of it. And, you know, I love that that's your approach too. And I think there's a commonality there that when you'll see that, I think, in a lot of businesses that are successful and in salespeople that are successful in industries that grow, is that there's somebody behind it that believes in a bigger purpose and really is passionate about it. And that enrolls other people. And I think that's a good sales strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the value, you know, stop selling and start helping.
Yeah. Yeah. Zig Ziglar.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff, real quick, you had some interesting things happen today. You had your first post go out on social business news from Michael Burrito. So
that is absolutely cool. Yep. Thank you so much. Thank you. Celebrity status. Yeah, I'm now blogging on Social Business News. That's socialbusinessnews.com. That is, I think it's like the fifth outpost of different places that I write. You know, I write on social media philanthropy, which is my baby. Been there since 2008. We've been published on Social Media Today 20 different times. Now we're doing Social Business News. I've got my Day in the Life blog, which is one of my absolute favorites to write on. It's just me from the heart, like what it's like to be a professional and build a company and do work that you love. And then, you know, I've got my food blog and other stuff like that. But it's really exciting to be on Social Business News, because if you look at the other authors that are on there, I mean, I am in some like really incredible company, and I'm extremely humbled to be, you know, on the same site writing with people like Michael Brito, former podcast guest of Social Echoes, and some of the other folks that are on there. They're really just incredibly, incredibly bright. And today's post, actually, when I posted it, one of the cool things that somebody retweeted it and linked to a post by Amber Naslund that had a very similar sentiment. And again, it's the sort of thing where I'm also, again, humbled to be mentioned and compared in many ways to some of the writings of someone like Amber Naslund, who's just so freaking brilliant. And I just love her perspective on social business. You know, it's a testament to like all the hard work, the reading, the podcasting, the engaging, the, you know, the willingness to just not know what the hell you're doing and jump in and break things and fix them and all that. You know, it is really cool to be where we are, and to be writing on Social Business News is definitely it's definitely an honor.
Well, congrats to you. That's an awesome thing. Yeah, and Michael Brito is a really, really great guy.
Yeah, he is.
All right, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure.
Hell yeah, man. This was fun.
As long as we have been. We'll start with you, Jeff. Where can folks go to be social with you?
My favorite thing in the entire internet is Twitter. Jay Gibbard. Meet me on Twitter. Jay Gibbard. You can also find me on Google+. Easiest way to get there is jeffgibbard.com/G. And that'll bring you right to my Google+ profile. I put in a nifty 301 redirect for that. But those are my two favorite places. Don't talk to me on Facebook. I don't even like going on there. Just Twitter and Google+, if at all possible.
Bye. Patrick? Yeah, so obviously live and, you know, love the reply button on Twitter. So it's a good place to start. I am Marketing Musing on Twitter. Or if you're fairly social, just go to Google.com, type in Patrick Goodman. I'm on the first page.
A good man for a good man. All right. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah. There's not a
hangout. Sad trombone.
You know, what's wrong, Jeff? You don't have some kind of button in there for your hangouts?
Ching.
Score! Hangout toolbox for the win.
And with that,
we'll need like little hats. What to do, like the things you put up, like the, you know, the Vikings hat and different stuff.
Yeah, we should do it. We should do a whatchamacallit, like a hangout toolbox chat where we do just like a 20-minute chat and like try and, yeah, like pick out like two or three things beforehand, like a couple hats or faces or different things, and we'll try and work it into conversation. It'll be a theme. It'll be like a gag episode.
Yeah. As Jeremy Clarkson says, and with that bombshell, we leave you tonight on Top Gear. But thank you very much to everyone listening out there. As always, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Social Echoes. You can find us on Stitcher Radio, same way. Visit our website, www.socialechoes.com.
Social Echoes Podcast.
Oh, yes, excuse me. SocialEchoesPodcast.com. I can't even read my own type on here. And there you have it. Until next time, we will see you guys later. We appreciate listening, as always. Have a great day. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
See you, everyone.